I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. In Seattle, apparently justice depends on how many boxes you check off. In an exclusive, we're going to compare the response the police department had to a transgender hate crime with the response it now has to an attack on a journalist over his perceived political beliefs. Plus, video evidence further erodes the tale that the University of Washington told us about a graduation protester. And a local business owner joins us after he was spammed with bad reviews for the crime of driving a Cybertruck. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Just click on the banner that says support the show. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here on this Tuesday. Tuesday. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. I told you we'd have a few stories on the show this week where I wanted to really bring receipts and make you understand when I complain about some of the hypocrisy at play and the different ways that right-wing violence is treated compared to left-wing violence, as an example, the difference in political bravery when it comes to confronting those things. You know, I want you to know that when I'm talking about that, when I'm making those allegations, this isn't just, you know, a hypothetical situation. There is plenty of evidence to prove the claims that I'm making. And so, you know, I don't want to belabor the, yes, I do want to belabor the attack on independent journalist Cam Higby, because there's been no justice for it yet. Antifa clearly attempted to severely physically harm and or kill him. And the response we have seen so far is not sufficient. It's not sufficient. Absolutely not sufficient to have a journalist beaten so hard that a dent was left in his helmet outside a federal building in Seattle by violent left-wing extremists who've been doing this for years and years and years. We've played the video before, but we will revisit it now. Yeah. So the thing about this, I think that's so infuriating to me, and I'm going to give an example of how different the responses are toward that attack and another attack that happened recently. One of the most infuriating parts, and I think what sets it apart from what happened to me outside a DHS facility in Tukwila, is we know exactly who beat up Cam. You know, with me, they covered their faces. We haven't been able to identify them yet. So that's a much more difficult task. And I wasn't hurt as severely as Cam was. That was a felony assault, right? And the day after it happened, the guy was ID'd. So it's been 9 days now where we know exactly who the attacker is. It's a frequent flyer named Jeremy Calvin Lawson. He's 33 years old. He lives in Monroe, Washington. He's been going all around Monroe. We've been getting emails from folks saying he's pleading his innocence. He even knows he's the guy on the video. And we, you know, had heard from Cam, and I've heard from sources at the Seattle Police Department, that there has had to be some wrangling. And I would say, you know, people trying to pressure the powers that be at SPD to take this case seriously. It's been assigned to a detective now, but 9 days, you know who the guy is. He hasn't been arrested yet. We checked with SPD yesterday. So there's no excuse for it. But I want to, again, I don't want you to think that this is some hypothetical where if I said, oh, if it was, you know, a different type of attack or a different kind of attack, or it'd be treated differently, because I can bring receipts on it. So I want to give you a very recent example and let you be the judge of whether politics and partisanship is coming into play when it comes to who gets justice and how quickly. So you might recall back on March 27th, there was a very real, this wasn't a Jussie Smollett moment. This actually happened. We talked about it on the show. March 27th, there was a ton of coverage around an attack on a transgender individual in the university district in Seattle. And of course, the media covered it quite a bit, and as they should. I think it was a story worth covering, just like I think Cam's attack is a story worth covering, but the mainstream media completely ignores that. But just if you're not familiar with that attack, so basically the victim, who identifies as a transgender woman, so I think that's a man who identifies as a woman, right, told police they were heading to meet their partner at the light rail station. Small group of men comes up, calls them a drag queen, says, take your effing makeup off. The victim takes out their cell phone to record the men, and then court documents say the group of suspects began assaulting her by punching her in the face. And it was like there was injuries. This is a real attack that happened. There was evidence and video in the surrounding area. So I'm not saying the attack was made up, and I'm not saying the attack wasn't serious. When you have a group of people who in broad daylight is willing to attack and beat someone up because of their perceived gender or gender identity or sexual orientation, that's a problem. And it deserves treatment from the police that takes it seriously. And police did take it seriously. So the media was on it just like that. Again, I don't think that's a problem. I think they should be, because the suspects were at large. We had elected leaders putting out statements of condemnation, which again, I don't think is a problem if they want to condemn crime. I think that's a very good thing. I would like to see them condemn more crimes than just, you know, transgender hate crimes or whatever it might be. But this got a lot of attention. Less than 24 hours later, the key suspect was in custody. This from the Seattle Police Blotter, March 28th. They put it out at 12:45 p.m. So not even 24 hours later, the guy is in custody. And he had a long, long rap sheet. He had bail set pretty high. I think his bail was set at $200,000. But again, less than 24 hours later, less than 24 hours to get the key suspect in the attack on a transgender individual, which is a hate crime under law, into custody. Now, that's not an accident, okay? That doesn't just happen because, you know, it was that easy of a case to solve. The Seattle Police Department, according to an internal email that we've obtained, threw everything it had at this case in the minutes and the hours after it transpired. I'll let you be the judge of why. Of course, I have my opinions. Here's an email we've obtained from a Seattle Police Department source that was sent out 2:30 p.m. on March 28th. So again, less than 24 hours after that attack on a transgender individual. I'm going to read the whole thing to you so you can understand the true weight of resources that were dedicated to this single assault in the University District. Good afternoon, colleagues. I want to take a moment to sincerely thank each of you for your dedication and teamwork in response to the violent hate crime attack against a transgender victim in the University District on Thursday evening. The coordinated efforts of North Precinct Patrol, Relational Policing, SWAT, and the Hostage Negotiation Team were instrumental in ensuring a swift and professional response, demonstrating the very best of what we stand for as a department. For those who may not be aware, officers were dispatched to University Way around 6 p.m. on March 27th after a 911 call from the victim, who reported being attacked by a group of men shouting anti-transgender slurs. The victim was able to escape and seek refuge in a nearby business, where officers quickly arrived to provide aid. Though the suspects had fled, Seattle Fire responded to evaluate the victim, and with the help of witness statements, officers were able to develop probable cause for a hate crime. SPD's LGBTQ+ liaison also contacted the victim to offer support. Patrol officers worked diligently to identify a suspect vehicle, linking it to a recent incident and a suspect matching the attacker's descriptions. When officers located the vehicle and observed the suspect entering a residence, they established containment, leading to a department-wide activation. The coordinated efforts of North Precinct Patrol, SWAT, and HNT ensured a safe and successful arrest. The case is now under investigation by our bias crimes detectives. This response is a powerful example of how we, as a department, are greater than the sum of our parts. When we work together with skill, compassion, and professionalism, we achieve meaningful results. In too many places across this country, crimes like this are ignored, minimized, or handled without the necessary care and strategic approach. Here in Seattle, we stand firm in our commitment to justice, ensuring that every victim is heard and every crime is taken seriously. Thank you for your unwavering commitment to selfless public service, to protecting our communities with integrity, and to upholding the values that define us as a department. Your words make a difference, and I am deeply grateful for each of you. With sincere appreciation, Sean F. Barnes, Chief of Police, he, him, his pronouns. Now, look, I don't have a problem with that amount of effort going into a random violent assault. I don't. I wish we had enough Seattle police officers where that could be the response to every assault in the city, where every victim of a violent crime got what I would characterize as a concierge police response, a department-wide activation for an assault. A department-wide activation. SWAT, the LGBTQ plus liaison, a fire response, the North Precinct patrol team, the hostage negotiation team brought in to help effect the arrest. The full weight of the Seattle Police Department for an assault investigation that I would argue is because the victim checked the right boxes. And again, I think that's fine, as long as you are also dedicating that same amount of resources and care and concern and personal investment as the chief of police into other violent assaults in the city. And unquestionably, you're not. The case of Cam Higby is an example. If we can play the video of Cam's attack again. Beaten because of his work as an independent journalist in the United States of America, protected by the First Amendment, and because of his perceived political bias against Antifa and their cause. Beaten so hard, it left a handprint in his helmet. And it took days of attention and wrangling to even get a Seattle police detective assigned to the case. The individual responsible for it, we've known the identity of for 9 days. His identity is not in question. We know his address. Police know where to find him. And he hasn't been arrested yet. And you compare that to the response to the attack on the transgender individual, which again, and I'm sure the lefties will hear this and say, Brandy's saying that that's too much of a response for a transgender, a hate crime against a transgender person. That's clearly not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that that individual got a special response, a department-wide activation, because the Seattle police chief and the mayor deemed it so. In fact, the next day, Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell was signing additional protections into law for transgender individuals and members of the LGBTQ plus community. Now, we can have sort of a debate, it's going to be the subject of our subscriber show poll today, about hate crimes in general, and about the fact, you know, should there be this special characterization of a hate crime? Does a hate crime like this deserve additional attention to any other assault? Or should they be treated equally? Should attacking a journalist who's doing their job, in the process of doing their job, be a hate crime? Should attacking someone based on their perceived political beliefs be a hate crime? We can have all those conversations, but at the end of the day, you can't sit here and tell me that the attack on Cam Higby was any less severe than the horrible attack on this transgender individual. You can't tell me that the attack against Cam Higby wasn't motivated by hate. Hate for him as a person, hate for him, his profession, hate for his politics. In one case, it takes days of attention and shaming to even get a detective on it. In the other case, within 24 hours, they've tracked the key suspect down. They brought in SWAT, hostage negotiators, did a department-wide activation, are utilizing the North Precinct Patrol to go out and round up evidence and contact witnesses and collect video and track down a suspect vehicle. You can't convince me that in the city of Seattle, justice is based on whether you check the right boxes. That is very, very clear. All right, I want to do a follow-up on a story we've been exclusively updating, because every time I get another, we get another tip from one of you about it, it just gets worse and worse. And it all stems from a University of Washington law school graduation, where some crazy leftist, as we showed you the photo. So this is kind of developed for us too. It's been interesting because first we got the photo that was straight on where you couldn't even really see the person holding up the sign, but it's this massive sign that says you can't be pro Palestine without being pro armed resistance, which is clearly a call to violence. And if you're a Jewish student or faculty member or parent who's in the audience, that's a pretty startling thing to be up on stage for, as we were told, 10 minutes without interruption. Nobody yanked her off the stage or anything like that. And you'll recall that the response we got initially from the University of Washington when we asked about this, didn't make a whole lot of sense to us, because we can see the photo for ourselves. We see that this person is right on stage. And the fact that they weren't bothered and they were allowed to just have this call to violence against Jewish people for around 10 minutes was startling. But I just want to remind you of the first response we got from the University of Washington on this. They condemned, you know, any calls for violence. They said the event continued without interruption and there was no audible response or reaction from audience members, and that law school leadership on stage was focused on the celebration, didn't notice the individual. And unfortunately, it took some time for event managers to be made aware of the sign being held up. The individual was asked to leave. Nonetheless, it was disappointing. And then they said, we're working to confirm the identity of the individual who was responsible. And so at the time, the part of that that stood out to me initially was, you're telling me nobody noticed this person? They're right on stage. The sign is massive. And Nicole, if you can go back to the photos, the second photo that we got showed this individual from a side angle. And it revealed new information for us. First, you can see members of the faculty looking straight at them. They clearly see what's happening there. And then you can tell that this person was in graduation garb, that they were a graduate. It wasn't some random human being who jumped on stage and held up this sign. This person was a graduate. So then we started to realize, wow, that statement from UW was really a load of shit. Because not only was it clear that this person was visible, but you're telling me you're working to confirm the identity of the individual because they're a graduate? So let's still give them the benefit of the doubt. There's a lot of graduates there, several hundred. So if someone jumps out of the crowd and they're all wearing the same thing and they jump up there and hold up the sign, well, you know, we've got to figure out who it is because we don't know on site the name of every single graduate. So I could give them the benefit of the doubt there. Except now we have the video. And the video shows that this person's name is read, they get their degree, and they immediately proceed to pull this sign out of their garb and hold it up. Here's the video.
Quinn Weber.
Not Quinn, Quinn's innocent. Here we go. Kafia.
Jenna Lee.
Now watch as Jenna gets her
Skylar
degree,
Owen
reaches
Martin
into her garb, immediately pulls that sign out. Can you play it one more time? Well, one second. There's something I want to point out. So you'll see it again where she, you know, she's got her keffiyeh on. And then she goes and you see her start to pull the sign out so she can display it. But what I want you to pay attention to if you're watching this time, and I'll explain it after the fact for those who are just listening on the podcast, is the guy reading the names. The reason we kept in an individual before this Jenna Lee and after is because what you can see is the guy taking a slip of paper from them. And that's so they have their name with a pronunciation on it. So that's how he knows whose name to read. So there's no confusion about giving the wrong degree to the wrong person or whatever it is. So what you'll notice, and I'll play it back in a moment, is, and this is true for the individuals who are even ahead of this guy who we left in, this guy has to read the name. He doesn't know who the graduate is. But when it comes to this woman, the protester, Jenna Lee, notice he doesn't have to read the slip of paper to say her name. He knows who she is. Watch again.
Quinn Weber.
Clearly read that, Quinn Weber. Now watch. He does not look down at the paper she hands him. He knows who it is.
Jenna Lee.
Even with the COVID mask on and the keffiyeh on her head.
Skylar Owen Martin.
He read it there too for Skylar. He had to read it on the paper. That faculty member knew exactly who it was. Because you could say there could be an argument made, and this just pisses me off because I don't like to be lied to. I don't like to be lied to. This wasn't a situation where it was some rando who popped up and you've got to confirm their identity, literally graduated, name was read, immediately went to the side and held up the banner calling for violence against Jewish people. So don't feed me this line of bullcrap about, oh, we're looking into who it is. That's absolutely ridiculous. And you could say, well, you could have another argument. Let's just disprove all the arguments proactively that they could ever make. Is, well, you know, they might say, well, it could have been a fake name that they handed on the paper, but we know that the faculty member didn't look at the paper. So they'd have to be in cahoots with it to spout off some fake name. No, faculty member didn't have to read the paper because they knew the student. They knew the graduate. So it is Jenna Lee. There was no point of time where the university, where her identity was in doubt. So that's what makes me mad. Look, had we just had this story initially and we had done it, this is what's so stupid about this stuff. And we had done it and they would have said, yeah, this was ridiculous. We don't know why it took so long to get her off stage. Clearly, we don't support calls for violence. We know who it is, but they graduated and we don't really know what we can do to them at this point. I would have taken that. I would have been annoyed by it. Really, it took you 10 minutes to get her off the stage, but we would have moved on. We never would have talked about it again. But then you send us these BS statements where it's like, we aren't sure who it is and we're looking into it. And it's like, no, you are. You do know who it is. And people did see her. Like, we have a photo showing they're looking right at her. So don't lie to us. You know, it bothers the hell out of me. And then while they're sitting here, like, suggesting, like, oh, this is a mystery human being, they were busy scrubbing her name from their website. Oh, the Wayback Machine is really a handy tool, isn't it? May 2025 for alums listed by the Tech Policy Lab at the University of Washington. So she was a part of this thing called the Tech Policy Lab. There you see Jenna Lee between Charles Simon and In-Yong Chung. Jenna Lee, second year law student, blah, blah, blah. They, them, by the way. Jenna Lee, they, them. They are passionate about data privacy and cybersecurity and currently exploring their interests in intellectual property through their coursework. COVID mask, kafia, call for violence against Jews, they, them. It's got everything. The bingo card is full. It's a blackout bingo. So May 2025, name is listed there. After we reach out about this incident and we put it on our show, June 2025, guess whose name is missing from between Charles and In-Yong? Jenna Lee. Name's not there anymore. Scrubbed from the site. So don't. Like, that's what bothers me. That's why I'm belaboring the story. Crazy people are going to do crazy stuff. In this case, Jenna Lee did it after she got, literally right after, seconds after she got handed her degree. She's already finished. There's really not much they can do to her. So, you know, would have been a one-day story. And now what has it been, 2 weeks? Where we keep doing follow-ups about this? Because they won't reason with us. They won't be straightforward. They want us to believe that they care about this stuff, that they're taking it seriously, and that they're not fostering this environment on campus where it's okay to casually wish violence upon Jewish people and Jewish students. But then they feel the need to tell us myths, mistruths. And I'm not going to blame specifically, kind of, the actual communications person. I like Victor quite a bit. I've known him for a long time. He's been in that position for a long time. He might be being fed something that's not true. I don't know who's initially feeding the lie, but you can look at the video and see for yourself what happened. So it just bothers me. Now I'm not letting it go. And also, Jenna Lee, they, them. Interested in data privacy, cybersecurity, exploring interests in intellectual property through their coursework. Amazon, Microsoft, who am I, Expedia, Google. Be on the lookout. That's not somebody you want to hire, because that's the kind of person that's going to stay just sit in the office of the president of your company and is not going to leave until you divest all your interests from Israel. So Jenna Lee, not suitable for postgraduate employment. Good job. Good work with that, Nicole. I know you were doing a lot of digging, and our viewers and our listeners who keep updating us on that story. I don't let it go.
I mean,
I don't like being lied to. You know what else I don't like? I don't like when petty people use their personal political vengeance to go after people's small businesses. We have just such an example coming up next. First, if you're trying to save some money, and who isn't, right? I was just recently thinking, I need a new car. My car payment's too high. It's just too high. I don't need a high car payment. This is a side note.
Okay.
I got to trade in my car for something more utilitarian.
I bet your insurance will be cheaper as well.
You know what? Speaking of insurance, we have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com. Teamwork. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they're always going to have your best interest in mind. And one of your best interests is going to be not paying more than you have to pay for insurance. And Nicole is right. If I get a cheaper car, something a little more utilitarian, I want something like a safari type vehicle that I can be out at our property in.
Safari.
I'm not taking my nice luxury SUV out on the gravel roads at our property. So I need something that's just more basic.
Okay.
I just want safari type.
They might not be cheaper, but... Maybe more useful.
I don't know. I'll figure it out. But, of course, if that happens, then First Mark will handle it for me. They'll go out. They'll talk to the carrier, say, hey, are we adjusting here and there? And they're going to try to make sure that I have the coverage I need, because that's important, but that I have the coverage at the right price. And we hear from viewers all the time. Jacob emailed us saying he finally took the First Mark Challenge. They saved him $600 on their home. and around $2,000 a year for his family's cars. He says they were honest and easy to work with. My wife even knew our agent's mother from the past. See, I love that. It's like you're a member of the family, the Firstmark family. So take the Firstmark challenge today. Firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Yeah, if you've got like a cool SUV, midsize, and you like it, give me a good recommendation. I was thinking like a, what are the Toyotas?
Well, I want a Jeep, like a Jeep regular.
Yeah, something like that, but like a Toyota. What are the, is it a 4Runner?
Uh-huh, yeah, the Toyotas.
I like those. Mm-hmm. You know, something a little higher up.
Yep, I like those.
What's happened to me? I used to be this bougie city girl, and now my husband is just turning me into a country bumpkin. It's just a lot. Love you, sweetie. Anyway, all right. I saw this story online. It made me angry. I don't like when people mess with small business owners. And so I thought, gosh, I have a platform that can help this small business out. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Okay, there is a carpentry remodel construction company in the Cleveland-Ellensburg area called Squared Up Builds. It's owned by a nice man named Aaron Schwetz. And he was on X yesterday or the day before, I can't remember when I was first alerted to this, expressing some frustration over some negative reviews his business received. So Aaron and his wife, he really wanted a Cybertruck. And there was just something about the Cybertruck that spoke to him. And he thought, well, if we get a Cybertruck, why don't we also use it as kind of a mobile advertising for our small business? So here's what they ended up doing. Here's a picture of the Cybertruck for Squared Up Builds. And it just goes around. It's got a little advertising on the side of it. Cool. So a little dual purpose there. Well, he posted this and he said, pretty lame. Two people who have never had work done by us trying to bring down our Google rating because we drive a Cybertruck. All other reviews, 5 stars. Have a lot of feelings about that. I'm sure you do. So because they dare to drive a Cybertruck that has their business logo on the side of it, here are a couple of the reviews that were left. And it's a small business, so you're not going to have hundreds upon hundreds of reviews as a small business. And on Google reviews, they only have 13. All of the other ones are 5-star reviews. But here are 2 recent ones. From Alec Chinnery, who calls himself a local guide, so don't use Alec. He said, uses Cybertruck for advertising. 1 star. Okay, great. Trill Collins. Oh, okay, local guide must be some sort of Google review thing.
Maybe so.
Okay, because I was like, are they both local guides? Okay, I'm not the smartest sometimes. 1-star review. I can't imagine this company makes very smart financial decisions given the fact that they have purchased a literal Nazi mobile on the company's credit card and used it as advertising. Pathetic. 1 star.
I really hate people's overuse of literal.
Literal Nazi mobile. In case you're not aware, that is a literal Nazi mobile. Like, that's what Hitler and the SS drove. Literally that. Mm-hmm. Literally. So that happened, and it was very bothersome to Aaron and his family. And as we learned a little bit about Aaron before we talked to him this morning for the interview you're about to see, this is a great, high-quality human being, husband and father. Someone who is a good person. Was actually hard to get him to say anything like bad about these people besides the fact that they left these bad reviews. Man of faith, like I said, husband, father, who has overcome some pretty remarkable obstacles in his life to be able to build a business, be a job creator, support his family. So as soon as I saw this story, I thought, we need to have this guy on, give him a little free advertising, and let him tell the story about what happened and hopefully reach these people and let them know the impact that actions like this have. Aaron, welcome to Undivided.
Morning.
Well, I'm so glad, you know, not to say you're getting a big gift, but I would say a 5-minute ad on our show would probably cost like 10 grand. So we're gifting it to you because people on the internet are rude and I don't like it. It's hard to build a business. And so I don't like when people meddle in people's hard work for no reason. I've only had a chance to talk to you for a couple minutes, but I can tell you're just an awesome guy. So I'm so glad happy to have you on. Talk about your business quick. Give us the spiel about what you do. This is your commercial moment.
All right, so I've been in the trades since I was a teenager, and never really looked back. Started bottom, sweeping floors, drywall, framing, all of it, and then had some struggles in life because of construction and ended up starting my own company. And then that was 11 years ago, and have a team of five incredible guys right now. Couldn't do it without any of them. My wife's my business partner, and I'd say probably does most of the work behind the scenes. So, but yeah, just we focus on remodels, new construction, specialized carpentry, kind of stuff that other people might not be able to do.
And what area does Squared Up work in mostly?
Cle Elum in Ellensburg, we work mostly in Kittitas County. We had a small remodel in North Bend that we popped over and did this winter, but yeah, mostly the Cle Elum area.
Got it. And you mentioned you had some struggles in life. I think this is important as we talk about, like, you don't know people that you're going after, you know, on the internet. You fell into addiction kind of what, like late teens, early 20s, or
25. Yep.
25. Wow.
Yeah. Had a work injury, had a couple of back surgeries, and got prescribed opiates. And then that was kind of game over for a couple of years. So,
Yeah. What allowed you to sort of get out of that? Because a lot of people have a hard time.
number one, my faith. Number two, my support system, my wife and my family and my friends. And yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you should be proud of yourself for getting through that and then building a business that seems to be doing pretty well.
Yeah, it's doing okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But if trolls on the internet would have their way, it would not be doing okay. So, first of all, I was alerted to this on the internet. That you get a ton of 5-star reviews, like people who've done business with you, if not all of the reviews that have been left are 5-star reviews. People love the work that you do, so I know it's quality work. When do you notice that there's a couple not so stellar reviews?
Yeah, because I get an alert on my phone whenever I get a Google review. And we were waiting on a good review because we had some hiccups and we're waiting to finish a project up. But I don't usually expect a review unless we have a project wrapping up. So one popped up and I opened it and I just could not believe it. We ordered a Cybertruck, the Foundation Series, way back when for the business, thinking it'd be a great advertising, put our logo on it. And at first, I thought it'd be a work truck, but I found out it's not really suitable for construction work, but it still gets the point across and people see it. But some guy just went on Google reviews and just slammed our company, saying we make poor decisions and that we're not a good company and all these things solely based on the fact that we drive a Cybertruck. And he had never, for all I know, I've never even seen this person or met this person.
So
And
there's,
then
oh, go ahead.
followed up by another one behind that.
Yeah, there's two of these bad reviews, which for a small business, two bad reviews, if that's the thing that pops up at the top, that can be a deal breaker if people
100%.
don't take the time to read it. So one from an individual named Alec uses Cybertruck for advertising, 1 star. And then this from someone named Trill, 1 star. Can't imagine this company makes very smart financial decisions given the fact they have purchased a literal Nazi mobile on the company's credit card and use it as advertising. Pathetic. So you see these, I mean, for you, all the work you put into your business, the pride you take in your work, how does it make you feel?
It's honestly a little bit angry, but more just disheartening because, like, to your point, these people don't know me, and we strive to be a very honest, hardworking company that we pay our taxes. We hire people and we provide for their families. And, like you said, there's a lot of hard work that goes into building a business. And a couple people that have reviews like that could really impact not just myself, but my employees and their families and everybody else. And so, yeah, it's disconcerting. The funniest thing was my wife goes, "Man, this guy must not know much about finances. I wish we could have put that on a credit card because that'd be sweet for the points for trips."
Yeah, exactly. So I must ask, on behalf of Inquiring Minds, Aaron, are you a literal Nazi?
No.
Okay. Are you sure? Because Trill on the internet thinks you are.
Yeah, I'm positive.
Yeah. Have you tried to challenge these reviews with Google? Does it allow you to do that?
So that's the ironic thing too. I'm not super tech savvy, obviously. I've been in construction forever, but I didn't really know where to turn. I didn't research it either. I should have Googled how to get rid of a Google review, but I'm on X, and so I just put a quick little post saying it was just kind of irritating, like hoping to get some support because I know it's a good platform, and especially a lot of local people will kind of are in the same circle there. So, and it got traction and People reported it. The reviews got removed. I had, granted, I got to be honest here, there's a couple of reviews on there that I've also never met them or done work for them, and they've given me 5-star reviews. So it's like, that's also the other way, not honest as well, but it's been a good experience.
The whole Tesla thing has been interesting to watch. Here you have this car company that was really embraced by, environmentalists for a long time, and of course then Elon's connection to the Trump administration. You were telling me you've been a little bit apolitical. So did you buy the Cybertruck because of Elon or?
Not at all. Like I said, first, I just thought it'd be good advertising. Although now that we do have it, it's one of the most incredible vehicles we've ever owned. I mean, as far you plug it in at night, you get it in the morning, you can go where you want. The benefits, it drives itself. It's an incredible vehicle. So I was thinking about this for the interview on the way driving in. When I was 7 or 8, my dad got me a model car of a Lamborghini Countach, and I thought it was the coolest car ever. And then 5, 6 years ago, when they announced the Cybertruck, I had similar aesthetics, and I'm like, I loved it. The kid in me loved it, and I thought it was cool. And now and the other thing, I don't want it to be a detriment. Business is one thing, you can always get more money. I don't want it to be a detriment to my family or their safety. So,
It's crazy you even have to think about that. So are you thinking about not using it for advertising because of this?
no, because over in Central Washington, it's who knows where this guy was from. It's really not that big of a deal, but if it became a problem safety-wise, yes. But other than that, I'm not too worried about it. I've been, like I said, I've led an interesting life, so I'm kind of used to hearing it all from people.
I guess what would your message be to the people who were leaving those reviews on your business?
I don't know if there's anything I could say that would make a difference or matter to people like that. I mean, I guess just think about the effect it has long term, not just keyboard warrior for 30 seconds. Like, that could really impact multiple families. And like, what if I employ people he's friends with and just doesn't know? Or, I mean, you just got to think about what you're doing before you do it. And don't slam people if you don't know them.
Yeah, I wish everyone took that to heart, but that's just not the way the internet goes these days. Well, Aaron, give us one final pitch for your business. So if people have projects, what kind of projects are you interested in taking on in that area? And then how can they learn more about your business?
Yeah, first and foremost, anything carpentry related. We love doing outdoor living spaces, additions, full remodels. We've also done new construction. So if you have a custom home build on up, I would say what I try to set us apart from other people is we're very transparent. There's a few other companies in town that are very good, that have always treated us fair and paid on time. And we just try to come in with a quality product at a It's everything's expensive, but we show you where your money's going and try to be fair. And first and foremost, do quality work. There's so many, I'm gonna say hacks. There's so many hacks out there. So
Yeah, 100%. Everybody's had an experience with one of those, certainly if they've gone through anything with their home. So, Aaron, well, we appreciate it so much. Thank you. Sorry this happened, but I think it'll end up being a net positive because people don't like this kind of stuff. So, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Brandy. I really appreciate it. And thank you, Nicole.
So there you have it, Aaron with Squared Up Builds, serving the Cle Elum and Ellensburg area, if you're interested and have some work to be done. And I think it's just an example of like people don't know. It's just this unhinged rhetoric. Like Aaron's wife is even an immigrant, a legal immigrant, I would mention. And here you have these lefties trying to tear down his business, which would hurt him, his family, his kids, his employees. And for what reason? Because they are that triggered by a Cybertruck. That triggered, like, you almost feel bad for them, right? You almost feel bad, but I'm happy we could maybe help Aaron out, turn a negative into a positive. And it does look like those reviews, thanks to online in savvy online individuals, have been scrubbed. So that's very, very good. All right, coming up next. So of course, the whole eviction moratorium issue has been disastrous for landlords in Washington State, but also other areas that embraced those moratoriums for too long. Well, down in LA, they're thinking about a different type of eviction moratorium related to Donald Trump's immigration enforcement. We'll talk about that coming up next. First, I have talked about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. And in fact, I should know, this is our last month with Eastside as an advertiser. And so we are so grateful to Eastside for, I think they've been with us for like 2.5 years. I'm almost to my goal weight. And honestly, I'm kind of past where I thought I would even be able to get with the program. I've got like 3 more pounds I'd like to lose just because it's a numbers thing. I'd feel really good about it. But I just feel fantastic. And it's been quite the journey over the last 2.5 years or so to lose my COVID weight, get back to my, I call it my TV news weight. But really, my weight, from when I was in my 20s, like 27 years old, that's the last time I weighed what I weighed now. So I just feel great. It's not the right program for every person. I mean, you know, weight loss needs are different, and what's going to work for me might not work for you. But I think the only way you're going to be able to find out is if you give Eastside Weight Loss Clinic a call or go online, eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com, schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. He'll tell you about the program, how it works, and then you can decide whether it's the right program for you to go ahead and invest in. But for me, it's been fantastic. And again, we're so grateful to Eastside for sponsoring the show for so long and helping me lose that, I might even call it stubborn, because I gained it so fast and then I lost it so fast. But that horrible COVID weight really did me in. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Okay, so a lot of the policies on the West Coast being made around rental housing, et cetera, have been insane, and they've led to worsening housing crises. So there's really nothing, you know, they say, the Democrats will say, we have a housing crisis. And then they'll do all these things that inarguably make the housing crisis worse. You know, the eviction moratoriums that happened during the pandemic, I don't think you'll find a lot of disagreement that at least for a small window of time, it was probably the right thing to do. Although I would argue there should have been some sort of financial proof requirement. Like, you didn't even have to prove here that you lost your job or any income at all over the pandemic. And you could still go like 2 years without paying rent, even if you had the exact same amount of money coming in. So it really just was a legal way to rob landlords of money. And some of them spent years trying to recuperate funds. It never got it back. It's just been an insane situation. But for the left, more and more with housing policy, they just care about what sounds good and what feels good. Oh, reparations, you know, based on skin pigmentation, but no proof whatsoever that your family was discriminated against in any way. Reparations for you. And then they'll complain that the housing crisis gets worse. So I've seen a lot of dumb ideas around this and a lot of dumb housing policy. This is probably the stupidest. For now, it hasn't happened in Washington State. But we know that when California does something, Washington State just follows like a little puppy. Just let me follow you around and do what you do. So this is from ABC7 Eyewitness News in LA. Groups call for eviction moratorium amid immigration raids across LA. It says they are calling on the Los Angeles City Council to take action. The LA Tenants Union, SEIU 721, and the Coalition of Labor Union Employees are joining forces and are holding a press conference, actually, as we speak. They want the City Council to pass emergency protections for people impacted by the raids, including an eviction moratorium. The union says many families may not be able to cover rent if a family member was taken into ICE custody or if they have family members choosing to stay home from work out of fear. And before you say, well, Brandy, that's just a crazy idea one group of people want. If you think there's a more powerful entity than SEIU, you haven't been paying attention. SEIU, along with the teachers union, West Coast, on the West Coast, unions rule the day. They help get people elected. And SEIU is a major union, a major donor for the Democrats who are in charge up and down the West Coast. So if you have SEIU pressuring Democratic politicians to do something, especially when it's something like this, where they can sort of blame the Trump administration and say, we have to protect these people, so it checks all the boxes for them, it allows them to virtue signal, I would not rule out that this is something that the city council in LA decides to do. So not only, like, you could make some sort of heartstring argument, right? Like, oh, this person got deported and snatched, what do they say, kidnapped off the streets by the Trump administration, but their family is here legally and they've got kids and the kids shouldn't have to pay the price or whatever it is, so let's give them a little stopgap eviction. You could make a heartstring argument for that. But can you really make a heartstring argument for people saying, I'm afraid to go to work because I'm in the country illegally, literally committing a crime, and so I'm not going to go to work, so my landlord should just have to foot the bill for me to stay home from work so I don't get deported by the Trump administration? And also, if the Trump administration wants to find you, you think that they can't find you at home? Like, if they can find you at work and they're looking for you, they could probably find you at home as well. So it makes no sense in the world it's an asinine policy, but of course, I would give it a 90% chance of LA deciding that this is something they want to do. I mean, they've already increased health, and all of the states on the West Coast are in a budget crisis. So California's budget crisis is arguably worse than Washington State's budget crisis. Yet in Washington State, they still found money to help boost money for healthcare for people in the country illegally, money for legal services for people who are in the country illegally. So why would they not maybe do an eviction moratorium or set aside funds to be able to help someone or a family of illegal immigrants? Of course they're going to do that. If SEIU asks for it, they're going to do it. And what about the immigrant landlords? Jaskaran Singh comes to mind, the Bellevue landlord, who had a guy squatting. He rented it legally, and then he just knew in this climate he didn't have to pay rent. There was that Jaskaran was never going to be able to evict him. So he had this guy for more than 2 years who didn't pay rent, and then the taxpayers would come in, and they would be forced to foot the bill through the Housing Justice Project for this just deadbeat who had the money, just didn't want to pay rent, knew he didn't have to. So the Housing Justice Project would take taxpayer funds and write a check to Jaskaran Singh, who wasn't collecting rent from this guy for 2.5 years. What about Jaskaran Singh and people like him, legal immigrants to this country who have worked hard, made investments? Jaskaran Singh isn't some big shot landlord. He's got, I don't know, that might have even been his only unit. Supplemental income for his family. Oh, they don't care about the legal immigrants. You're not the right kind of immigrant. In fact, we're going to protect illegal immigrants so they can steal from you. So this needs to be on our radar now, because if SEIU in California is talking about this, and if the LA City Council decides to do it, literally put an eviction moratorium in place, if you're an illegal immigrant, so you don't have to pay rent while Donald Trump is out doing his deportation efforts, it is only a matter of time before they're calling for it in the city of Seattle and across Washington State. Absolutely insane. Our weekly housing segment is brought to you by sane people at the Rental Housing Association of Washington. If you are a small to mid-sized landlord, the time to protect yourself is now. Join rhawa.org, rhawa.org, and they can help make sure you navigate this insane environment that we're in. Only a matter of time. Absolutely insane. We'll get to the... not the latest on Israel and Iran, but Donald Trump's very strong reaction to what's been happening there over the last... he dropped an F-bomb. I don't know if I've ever heard Donald Trump drop an F-bomb. Oh, he has? Okay, Nicole says he has. Apparently she's following his swearing closer than I am. All right, new episode of Doge Watch with Zach Abraham coming out soon, so be on the lookout for that. We're talking about a lot of great stuff that Doge has been up to behind the scenes. But in the meantime, if you're thinking about government efficiency, you should also be thinking about the efficiency of your retirement portfolio. There's a ton happening, from domestic policy to, of course, what's happening overseas. What impact will it all have on your hard-earned retirement and your ability to live the retirement that you've dreamed of and that you've worked hard for and saved hard for? Well, get a second opinion if you have any doubts whatsoever about your retirement allocations and the path that you're on. Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital can help you out with that. In fact, that's what they specialize in. They specialize in managing risk. You should be confident in the composition of your portfolio. You only get one retirement. Get a second opinion with our friend Zach at Bulwark Capital. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. Okay. All right, let's just play the clip of Donald Trump dropping the F-bomb.
Do you believe that Iran is still committed to peace?
Yeah, I do. They violated it, but Israel violated it too.
Israel,
as soon as we made the deal, they came out and they dropped a load of bombs, the likes of which I've never seen before. The biggest load that we've seen. I'm not happy with Israel. You know, when I say, okay, now you have 12 hours, you don't go out in the first hour and just drop everything you have on them. So I'm not happy with them. I'm not happy with Iran either. But I'm really unhappy if Israel's going out this morning because of one rocket that didn't land, that was shot, perhaps by mistake, that didn't land. I'm not happy about that. You know what? We basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what the fuck they're doing. Do you understand that?
And he walks away. Oh, man. As I said, you guys don't come to me for my take on foreign affairs. I will say, though, it did confuse me at the onset, this whole the ceasefire agreement and its the times that were allotted to each country. So it's like, okay, we have a ceasefire deal and Iran gets to shoot things for another 6 hours. And then after that, Israel gets to shoot things for another 6 hours. And I don't understand how that's good policy. I don't want to question the president and everything he knows behind the scenes, but clearly it turned out to not be good policy because there was like missiles in the air when the ceasefire was supposed to be going into effect, and it was all very messy. And of course, when he says he's mad at Israel because, you know, they say the ceasefire is happening, but then from there, 12 hours until Israel has to abide by it, but he's mad that Israel fired off missiles within the 12 hours that, as the terms of the ceasefire laid out, that they had to shoot things. So like, if you don't want them shooting things, then the ceasefire has to be immediate. So that just didn't make any sense to me. And I do understand why he's mad at it, and I agree with that. Like, if you really in good faith want to say, hey, we're working toward a ceasefire, maybe you have assets already in the air or something going on, so maybe put it at 2 hours and then have it end at the same time for everyone. And then if there's missiles that hit after that, then they're totally right to have some retribution because there were Israelis killed in that period of time. I think 3 of them or something in a strike that ended up hitting an apartment building, I believe. And so it just doesn't make sense to me how it all laid out. I think it was very messy. And then the media couldn't even grasp the concept. So you probably saw some of the news that was happening. So Trump announces the ceasefire deal, and then there's still activity and bombings happening. And the left is like, oh, Donald Trump's an idiot. See, they weren't going to do it. But technically, they still had some time. So it all turned into this very big, confusing mess. And I think the reason you saw Donald Trump so mad is Israel kind of embarrassed him. And I mean, in the sense that, like, they did him a little bit dirty. I mean, we came in with our bunker busters and we took care of the big nuclear facilities that Israel wasn't able to reach. And instead of doing Donald Trump a solid, because, like, even the left, when Donald Trump came out and said, it's a 12-day war, we're going to have peace in the region after everything the United States has did for Israel in the last few days and everything Donald Trump has done for Israel and what a good friend he's been. Israel should have been like 100%, you know, there's going to be a cessation immediately. If Iran will agree to it, we'll agree to it. So I think he kind of felt like they made an ass out of him, given everything that he's done. And so he's like, they don't know what the F they're doing. So for Donald Trump, like, I think he has thick skin, but if he feels personally slighted, like, that is a really stupid thing for Israel to do. That is such a stupid thing for them to do, but they were only playing within the agreement of the ceasefire. And then when Iran,
well, this is supposed to be like a heads up, they all had heads up, so it wasn't actually, I don't from my understanding, they weren't supposed to do real damage with what they
but
were.
It's like, then just stop it. I know, just say ceasefire, just, now it doesn't make any sense.
Like you said,
so
they don't know,
we'll call it
doing.
Hopefully a 13-day war. I mean, it still would be remarkable if we could limit it to 13 days. 12-day war, that's not going to work anymore. So hopefully it's a 13-day war. Yeah. But it's just fascinating to watch, like, the left in the media try to come up with something bad that Donald Trump has done in all of this. And it's like, actually, what he's done has been pretty remarkable. And something that the left and the right, some, have been advocating for a long time. And he took care of this huge problem in the world. And even if we have a shaky start to the ceasefire and maybe there's some lingering issues for a couple days, if you can, within like 15 days, let's say, achieve some sort of stability in this situation, that is absolutely remarkable. And I agree with people saying he deserves the Nobel Peace Prize. But it just drives, oh my God, I saw this really funny cartoon where it was like, I don't know if it was an MSNBC sort of talking head or something melting down. And it was like, the feeling when you realize that Donald Trump is in fact making America great again. It's like, what do you do? You have nothing else. And so it's just been interesting to watch the unhinged nature of it.
Thank you for your attention to this matter.
Yeah, he always ends his post, thank you for your attention to this matter. So it's become a good saying. But he is not happy with Israel. And Israel, I mean, we're the greatest friend they have. Donald Trump has gone out on a limb, even, you know, with people now calling him a neocon and a warmonger and all this from his own party and from the more, you know, conservative libertarian wing of the party. And so for Israel to piss him off, I was like, he is going to take that very personally. And I don't think you're going to have their same relationship moving forward. So that's interesting. All right. I wanted to get to our daily subscriber show poll quick. This had to do with a story we opened with about how differently the hate crime against the attack on a transgender individual was treated and investigated versus the attack on independent journalist Cam Higby by Antifa. So I wanted to ask you guys, should it be a hate crime? Should be added to the list of hate crimes to attack someone because of their politics specifically? Because Antifa doesn't go out there and attack all journalists. If the journalists, they think the journalists are sufficiently sympathetic to them and to their political beliefs, they don't attack them necessarily. But if you're a conservative journalist or deemed conservative, like, you're getting the beat down. So do you think, yes or no? Nicole?
Yes, I think so. I think that's where we are now. I think all of the, I think that all of the groups have been, you know, over time added to the list. And at this point, like, this is where we are. And there are specific attacks on people because of their politics and because of their cars, like we talked to to a business owner today. I mean, this is out of control. It is hate. And I think we do.
I mean, to me, and this is not the question I'm posing, so I don't want people to answer this poll under this lens, but I do have an issue with the hate crime kind of moniker, because to me, if you're assaulting someone, you're going to be driven by hate no matter what. So this idea that some assaults are hateful and some assaults aren't hateful is sort of weird to me. It's like, let's treat it based on the action. I don't know. And then you get into like the people who are the repeat offenders, and should there be some sort of added severity? Like, for instance, if you're going out there and you're targeting Jewish people repeatedly over a period of time, should that be? I don't know. But there's something about the hate crime issue that picks sort of winners and losers in the game of assault. And it's just weird to me. But if we're going to have hate crimes and attacking someone over their perceived gender identity, which is a changeable characteristic. You could say you're a man one day and not be a man the other, you know, so that's sort of weird. But like, for instance, color of your skin is much different. So the fact that there's these hate crime lists, but they don't all really make sense together is also odd to me. But if we're going to have hate crimes, then yes, attacking someone based on their politics, I think would immediately overnight account for the vast majority of hate crimes, because that's what we're seeing happen right now. Luke says, no, I don't. I agree with the sentiment that it would just be something else the left would use against conservatives. Bob says, lawlessness is lawlessness and should be treated as such. Unfortunately, in this state, lawlessness is encouraged from the governor on down. Yes, and that's a very frustrating thing. Sherry, I actually don't agree with the idea of hate crimes when we have existing laws against violence. But if this special category of crime is going to exist, then absolutely add attacking someone because of perceived political beliefs to the list.
I think it's one of those, it's kind of like a gun enhancement. You have to prove it happened, right? So if the gun's there, it happened. But if you can't just say, oh, let's tack on this enhancement without, you know, because they have different
proof
politics. You have to
motivated.
Somehow motivation led to it.
Yeah, and that's true for hate crimes now. Like, for instance, if you punched a black person in the face and stole their wallet, you weren't motivated by hate unless you can prove it, right? Mm-hmm. You were, like, motivated by trying to steal money from someone, right? So there is always that standard with hate crimes. There has to be. There's a burden of proof there. Todd Welch, I don't believe in the hate crime statutes, so I cannot ever agree in any additions. Gabrielle K over on Locals, the whole hate crime category should be eliminated. So a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah.
B. Larson, hello. No, an attack is an attack and should be treated as such, regardless of your political beliefs, color of your skin, or anything else about you others might not like. If you attack someone unprovoked, you should go to jail. Crafty Grandma Crispy says, as much as I want to say yes, where does it stop? Who decides what hate crime is, what a hate crime is? It's a very slippery slope when anyone, qualified or not, can decide what a hate crime is. It should be very limited in scope. Not every little perceived difference should be considered hate. Yeah, there are people who believe that misgendering someone is a hate crime. So, gosh, you give that tool to decide what's a hate crime and not
like
to
that.
An unhinged person. Mm-hmm. And, man, we're all guilty. I would be in prison already because they would characterize a bunch of things I do as a hate crime. Absolutely insane. All right, we'll get to comments. Miranda, day two of being our content comment moderator. How's she doing, Nicole?
Looking good.
Good so far, as if you'd say she wasn't doing a good job on here. But we like having Miranda's presence in the chat and in the comments during this. We'll get to those coming up next. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, maybe you're moving to a different city or moving to a different state, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Wes is simply the best, and not just because he's an advertiser on our show. We hear tons of great things about Wes, his communication, the quality of Wes Jones and Associates' marketing material. They really make your home stand out. If you compare their listings to other listings, like, there is not even close. There's no competition. The videos, all the different elements that they have to really bring buyers into the home and make buyers feel like they can fully experience the home and then draw them to step their foot in the door and get those offers on the table. I mean, when you see some of Wes's listings, you'll understand what I'm talking about. Wes Jones and Associates, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Start by going to their website and using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And then you can ask Wes for a free market analysis, which is sort of the next step. So he can give you an idea of how well your home is positioned, how homes are performing in your neighborhood, what you could expect. And then you can move forward from there. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, let's get to some comments, shall we? On our first story, talking about how SPD handled the trans assault versus the assault on Cam Higby. Rick Johnson says, so much for liberty and justice for all. Two-tier justice system. Yeah. And I'm not saying that the attack on the trans person should have been handled like Cam's. I'm saying Cam should be handled like the attack on the trans person.
Just be consistent.
Or be consistent. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, maybe activating a department-wide activation, you could argue, given everything else going on, might be a little too heavy-handed for an assault. But it's just like we're based on, okay, they checked this box. Oh, the mayor's talking about it. The governor's talking about it. There's a lot of pressure on this. It's a feel-good virtue signal opportunity. And then you get the chief writing this long email. This chief, man, not a fan. I haven't met him. Maybe the chief wants to come on with us and tell me why I should be a fan. But between him saying he expects to be arrested by Donald Trump and then basically ignoring what happened to Cam, not giving officers clear direction as to how they should handle left-wing and respond to left-wing extremism. He is like a tool puppet of the Democrats and the mayor, and it is just hard to watch.
Pretty sure that's why they picked him.
Yeah, they want a puppet, mm-hmm. right? Matthew Cook on Chief Barnes's email that we obtained through a source, prioritizing felony assault based on opportunity to virtue signal. Yep. Mike Bolton, Washington State government. Isn't there a Michael Bolton?
Yeah, the singer, Michael Bolton. There's lots of Michael Boltons. Have you ever seen Office Space?
What's the name of the guy who was in the Trump administration? But it's not Michael Bolton. Something Bolton. Oh, now I'm doing all these dumb things.
I don't know, but Office Space, that's a thing. Like, one of the guys that works there is Michael Bolton. Ah. And they keep saying, are you related to the singer?
Oh. Well, maybe this is...
You haven't seen that movie? You've seen that
movie. No, I've seen Office Space. Okay. It's just been a long time. That's okay. Where they smash the
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
I've wanted to do that to our printer. That printer never works.
Fair.
WA State government has abandoned the social contract. Therefore, citizens have no duty to obey. On the UW protester investigation, Matt Gilbert, surprised she didn't change her name to Jenna Side. Oh, I get it. Jenna Side. Okay, good one. Thank you well for done. That. Yes. Small biz given bad reviews over cyber truck. Sherry says, Trill Collins, you gave the 1-star review to Squared Up Builds would have been just fine with the company driving a Volkswagen, which comes from a company that actually was founded by the Nazi regime in Germany. Yeah, so if the company was using a Volkswagen for their advertising, that's not a literal Nazi mobile.
Right.
But the Cybertruck, a literal.
Literal.
Not literal Nazi mobile. All right, let's see. Charlie K, those reviews don't say anything about the good work he does. Given it was just about their Cybertruck, it would only attract me to looking into hiring them. Yeah, and I think there's a lot of people who said, if I saw those reviews on a company, but that's the thing is you have to read it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it brings down your overall star. Like for me, if I'm buying on something on Amazon, I don't know about you guys, if that thing doesn't have 5 stars or like 4 and a little, I'm not interested. Like if it's got a 4-star review, I'm just not interested in it. I know that sounds harsh, but especially if you've got a product that has like thousands of reviews and it's like a 3 to 4 star, I'm like, something's not good with it.
There's too many products.
Right. Too many options.
You can be that picky.
Yeah. And so you can bring down like, as an example, at the beginning of this podcast, when I was really primarily doing just the audio podcast once or twice a week, and didn't have a ton of reviews on Apple Podcasts, the little snaky lefties got in there and spammed me with 1-star reviews, and there was really nothing I could do about it. And it took a long time to make up for that,
right?
Because you got to have a lot of people on there. So if it's bringing down your review and you're not looking into it, then that's tough. Mm-hmm. But hopefully now some of you will be reaching out to Squared Up Builds. Let's see here. Trump says Iran and Israel don't know what they're doing. Jethro McButterpants, pretty sure Trump made the swear jar great again. I just can't remember him in a he kind of has, I guess, cursed in a more lighthearted way.
Yeah, maybe some this of those was little like, funny speeches, things like that.
You could tell he was genuinely mad.
He was mad.
He's like, you get that?
Netanyahu, he was not happy with, but.
I wonder if any of the networks were taking that live. Because, like, is that a, well, it can't be an FCC violation because you have a dump button that's like, what was your dump button in radio?
It's 8 seconds in
radio.
8 seconds
delay.
I think it's different for TV, but you don't have to. I think that they made some rule about it. I don't think it was that long ago.
Yeah.
Where if it happens in a case like that, it's okay.
Well, you can't. Don't get fined. Right. It's live, right? And it's the president of the United States.
Something with the political or like a public figure or something. There's some rules about it.
Yeah. Because I remember the debate when he called the S-hole countries. And yeah. I remember the debate in the newsroom about, do we bleep asshole? And I think we decided not to because the president, a presidential candidate was saying it, or was it the president at the time? I don't know. So yeah, it sort of watered it down.
I think most of them did when you replayed you had yeah. to or something like that. But I don't know.
Yeah, it was interesting. Let's see. Sherry on the California considering maybe an eviction moratorium for illegals. Forcing landlords to subsidize the government eviction moratorium rules is absolutely private property theft. If the government thinks it's a great idea to help these poor renters, then pay their rent for them. I don't support that either, though, and that's what she says. And yeah, that's not fair either, because I'm not paying their rent. Why should I have to pay and cover the cost of rent for illegals? But then a landlord shouldn't have to either. You're literally stealing money from them. You're stealing money from them. It's absolutely insane. It's allowed to happen. Mm-hmm. All right, some other comments and super chats.
Oh, John Bolton. That's who you were thinking.
Oh, yeah, sorry. John Bolton.
Oh, but he's not a Trump fan.
No, but he had to acknowledge that he agreed with Trump on
he did.
On Israel yep, and Iran. I did see and so that was like John Bolton. Yes, John yes, Bolton. Yes, John Bolton. Thank you. I'm not good at anything. Listen, guys. So I had to have a conversation quick. I got a lot of texts about my Barbara Ann little slip up yesterday.
I cannot believe that. I really thought you were just being sarcastic. It was a big joke. And so I would I'm have corrected you sooner, but I just didn't think
I literally
real.
Was so embarrassed about it. I edited it out of the yeah, podcast. But now I'm like, should I just own it? Should I just clip it and put it on the internet and be like, I embarrassed myself?
Nah.
I got so many texts about it. Like thing. Our friend Steve's like, you're canceled. Absolutely canceled.
He texted me about it being his first concert. And Beach Boys was actually my first concert ever.
I'm not even gonna repeat what I did because I'm so embarrassed by it, but I'm a fool, but I'm just not good at and so Steve told me to just remind people you've had so many concussions, and so you there know my you brain go. Doesn't work great sometimes.
That's fair.
All right, Bolt Up, really dislike it when work during my lunch break gets in the way of the Undivided podcast. How dare they? Ugh. Don't they know?
Shame.
Necro Two Shoes, Brandy needs to go full Elon and get a Cybertruck for her more utilitarian needs. Yeah, I don't know. I think they're hideous.
They are.
I like Elon. Yeah. I think Elon's great. I think they are so ugly. And then when one's driving behind you, it's got that like little like light thing. It's like a.
I don't mind that. I don't mind the lights, but it's not a pretty vehicle.
It's like a spaceship's driving behind you. You're like, what's in my rearview mirror? Is it time? Are they ready
or
for me?
Like a war vehicle.
Yeah, very strange.
Very strange.
Matt, if there was a show host that has property in Eastern Washington that needs some structures on it. Yeah, I don't have the money to build anything on our property yet. But one day, it's our retirement plan. Planning for retirement. But I did tell Aaron with Squared Up Builds that we definitely need a new deck soon.
I that's been on your list for a while.
It has. We did our home remodel during the pandemic and ran out of money and patience because the pandemic made everything more difficult. So we've got this great remodel and then this deck that's just like, sad.
Isn't it funny? I texted you this weekend, but I just happened to be out on near Gig Harbor, and I was talking to the neighbor of my friend, and he just happened to put in your doors.
Oh, my on your remodel. Back door. Oh, yeah, that's
like,
right.
Oh, Nicole, I put in Brandy's doors.
Yes.
Like, what?
And so we love that door. We got one of those, like, instead of a traditional sliding door, it kind of slides into the next panel. We love it. We absolutely love it.
That's
so we wanted it
sometimes.
To be longer,
so
but like every time you add a panel, it's like you add like $10,000.
Yeah.
So like, okay, we'll just put wall there. We'll just make it small. Yeah, home remodels are expensive. Anyway, okay, good comments today, everyone. Didn't miss any super chats or anything like that?
Yeah. No super chats today.
No super chats? I guess our show sucked. Okay, that's fine. No, please, don't mind me. All right, I'm just kidding. We love you. We love you. Your presence is a gift. Subscribing to our show would be a better gift, but your presence is a gift. With that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Oh, God. New York City is on the verge of just ruin, I tell you. So the mayoral election in New York City is happening today. It's ranked choice, which adds all these other weird things into the mix. We'll have an answer hopefully by tomorrow. I don't know. But the options for the two leading contenders are horrible. So no matter what, it's horrible. I hate to say it, but Andrew Cuomo, the former governor, who sent elderly people into nursing homes to their death during COVID. I hate to say it, he's the only choice. He's the only choice because the other guy is a straight up batshit crazy lunatic in Zohran Mamdani. Here he is screaming at Tom Homan, the border czar, The guy chest-bumping law enforcement is the one we want to be the mayor of New York City, and he was up in the polls. He also wants to spend $65 million on trans medical treatment, including for minors, if elected New York City mayor. Socialism, right? Got to socialize out those transgender medical procedures on children. Oh, he also thinks, by the way, that since food prices are so high in New York City, that it'll be better if they socialize it. Literally talking about bread lines. And the city has city-run grocery stores. Yes, the socialist wants the city-run grocery stores. And I also really believe that the guy who hates ICE, is chest-butting law enforcement, screaming and yelling at the border czar, is going to make New York City safer. Please, for the love of God. I know it's like 135 degrees in New York City today, but please, may the sane people come out to vote today. And unfortunately, the same result has to be Andrew Cuomo, which is also horrible. But compared to this other guy, he looks absolutely insane, absolutely sane. So I don't know. Just when I think Seattle has it bad. That's like Shama Sawant being elected the mayor of Seattle. That's even worse. This guy's even crazier because he's like violent and angry. I mean, she's angry, but it's just crazy. I don't even know.
We just got a super chat from Bolt Up, $10.
Oh, because I shamed you.
Just so the
streak doesn't end. Okay. I was really thinking I did something wrong today. I was thinking after my Barbara Ann flub yesterday, you guys thought I was so dumb that you were never going to watch again. And it really hurt my feelings. All right, cool. That has been our sanity check for today. Nicole, thank you. Hey, at least we started the show on time today.
There you go. It's a win.
So we're winning. And I'm having a good hair day. Another win. That's it. If you'd like to support our show, it's how we operate based on subscriptions. It's $5 a month. I think that's a pretty sweet deal given how much content we put out every week. I'm my own biggest cheerleader, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. You just click on the banner that says support the show for $5. We make it super easy. So we would absolutely love your support if you haven't signed up to help us out already. And that's it. I guess we'll kind of know how bad things are going to get in New York City maybe tomorrow. So we'll have to talk about that. I got to reach out to my friend Johnny, who lives in New York City, who once was so extreme. I think he voted for Shama Sawant, but I don't think he'll be voting for the insane person there, making sure he voted today. So, all right. We'll see you guys back on the live show tomorrow at noon.